This is KCUR. We've been exploring communities along the Missouri River over the past few months, and in doing so, one of the things we heard about was the legacy of slavery in some of those towns. It's something that people don't talk about much, but it did have an impact on the region. KCUR's Laura Ziegler followed up on the story and filed this report.
We know about how important Kansas and Missouri were to the outcome of the Civil War. But we don't know as much about what slavery looked like in this part of the country around that time.
It was very unusual for a Missouri slaveholder to own 20 slaves. And that's how historians have defined plantations, is 20 or more slaves. So what you're talking about oftentimes are just a few adults and then usually a number of children.
UMKC professor Diane Mudy Burke has written extensively about slavery in Missouri. Slave history, she notes, is very hard to verify. Historians have to puzzle together oral histories, newspaper accounts, advertisements, census data, and personal papers. But there is still some physical evidence of the local slave era. Just off the historic square in Liberty, there's a stately pre-Civil War house. Right behind that house is a garage-sized structure. And historians think it's one of the best remaining examples of slave quarters architecture in the area. Now, a young architect named Dan Waymuller lives there with his wife. They bought the house about 6 years ago, and he uses that space for spare tools.
It's quite small, actually.
It's not big, and it gets brutally hot in the summer. It would not have been too comfortable.
Historians and archaeologists are working to preserve remains like the DeMitt House in what's known here as Little Dixie. That's 17 counties along the river in western Missouri. Little Dixie got its name because it mirrored the economy of the slaveholders who migrated up from the Upper South in Kentucky and Tennessee and Virginia. Agriculture was at the center of the economy.
The hemp culture was centered along the Missouri River, and that's because the quality of the soil is better suited for hemp and tobacco production.
Gary Fenfausen is a cultural and architectural historian. He says hemp and tobacco were the major cash crops. Hemp had become increasingly profitable for rope to bind the cotton coming off the large plantations from the Deep South. And growing these crops, they used a lot of slave labor. In fact, Fenfausen says this area had 52%, more than half of the slaves in the state.
Platte County, one out of four people would have been an African-American slave. Platte County was one of the important hemp and tobacco counties within the Little Dixie region, as well as the state of Missouri.
The Missouri River was a defining feature of the conflict over slavery in this part of the country. It was a physical barrier that became a symbol of the bloody Civil War to come. Park University history professor Tim Westcott and I look out over the river from English Landing in Parkville.
So economically, socially, politically, everything focused on the river. You had the confluence of the Kansas and the Missouri River, connection to the Kansas Territory, and then the state of Kansas.
Violence raged on both sides. There are stories of slaves who escaped across the frozen river in the wintertime, but it was a huge risk. Some got away in skiffs under the cover of darkness, but pro-slavery guerrillas and border ruffians crossed from slave counties to return slaves to Missouri and to try and keep Kansas from becoming a free state. Much of that fighting centered around the abolitionist ports of Quindaro. It was a mecca for the anti-slavery movement. Quindaro attracted people like Vermont-born activist Clarina H. Nichols. She was a crusader for both women's rights and against slavery, and she came to Quindaro in the mid-1850s. Here's a reading from her papers.
I carried to my native town in Vermont a pair of manacles filed from the ankle of a stalwart black who had escaped from the vicinity of Parkville, having drawn 1 foot from the encircling iron, and brought the chain still attached to the other in his hand.
The old Quindaro Cemetery sits on a bluff overlooking the river above what was once the thriving community of African Americans, Europeans, and Wyandotte Indians. From here, Anthony Hope can look directly across the river and imagine where his great-great-grandparents, Robert and Julia Monroe, might have escaped to freedom. Standing in the cemetery, he looks at Robert and Julia's faded headstones. They're surrounded by many others from his family.
Okay, we're looking at my mom, Helen V. Monroe Hope. And next to her to the left is her mother and father, Zolly Sr. and Ethel B. Monroe. And behind my mom is Victoria and Walter, her grandmother and grandfather.
And right there in the middle of all the Monroe family headstones is a new one. It's piled high with fresh dirt, and it's that of Jesse Hope, Anthony's brother. He died in July of this year at the age of 62. Jesse spent half his life working to save Old Quindaro, and now Anthony is carrying on his work. More than 150 years since the Missouri River played such a central role in pre-Civil War politics, activists and preservationists are grappling with challenges that have roots in that past. The hope is that a more authentic and full understanding of the past will help resolve some of those challenges moving forward. Laura Ziegler, KCUR News.